this is Emma.
Hello.
Hi, this is. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is Emma Schrader. Is this Margo?
Yes.
Is this an okay time to call and talk?
Oh, yes. We were going to talk about the garden.
We were. If this isn't good, I know it's your first day back from vacation. We can arrange another
time. It's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess I'd like to just start by telling you a little bit about what my research is or why I'm interested in the gardens, and then ask for your consent, of course, to participate in the research.
Oh, yes, I haven't sent that yet.
All I need is your oral consent, so...
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Is it okay if I record this interview before?
Sure, it's fine.
Okay, great. So I'm in the master's program in the geography department, and I'm interested in landscapes and food systems and social environmental interactions, and I found the gardens when I first moved to Madison, and then my advisor told me that nobody had ever done a project on their history or how they're seen or the different communities that use them and how they interact. So that's what I'm trying to do, sort of create a comprehensive history or picture of the garden landscape.
Okay.
Do you have any questions before we start, I guess?
No, it's a field I've worked in myself.
Oh, what?
I'm a retired professor of urban planning and worked especially in environmental planning.
Fascinating. That's, very interesting.
So I got, and the Granite Garden, and, directed students who have done master's degrees on community gardens and things like that.
Fascinating. Maybe I should ask you some academic help questions by the time we're done. It's certainly a learning process, that's for sure.
That's what it's all about?
Yeah, I guess so. What I've been asking people when I first call is what the garden was like when you were there, because it's changed dramatically, I think, or just how you perceive the garden space while you were gardening
there.
Yeah. And how long you gardened, when that was. That's information.
Oh dear. Okay. Well, let's see. We lived in the 100s, so we were right along the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not like the gardens were in our path. They were kind of up behind, I think, the 200s and 300s. At the time, it only went that far. Probably
mm-hmm.
much higher now. And I'm trying to think how we first heard about them. May have been a flyer that came out or something like that.
Mm.
Anyway, we were very excited about it, about having them and getting involved with them. My family's longtime gardeners, my husband not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, we were living on very little money. We had $100 a month,
mm-hmm.
and $200 a month, and $100 of it went for rent.
Mm-hmm.
So anything we could do to, we had two children, expand our, stretch our dollars
yep.
was very welcome. So we went up and found them and started participating in the gardens. And we love to tell some of our stories about living in Madison. I have to do a round with the gardens. One of them is I come from California originally, from the Berkeley Bay Area,
mm.
and my husband comes from northern New Mexico.
Mm.
And so we had never seen things grow like they did there. We often tell the story that we put green beans in, and we would go up in the morning to water and hoe, and there'd be two leaves, and we'd come back in the afternoon, and there were four leaves.
Yeah.
We were just absolutely astonished by this. And there's also a great joke on me because we bought a six-pack of tomatoes thinking we would need those. And, of course, we just couldn't give tomatoes away fast enough at the end. There were just so many.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had tomatoes, so nobody wanted them. And we had one neighbor, who was a great canner and so forth, and she made endless amounts of tomato sauce and spaghetti sauce and tomato paste. And I wasn't that ambitious, but I didn't because I just said I've never done that before. Never canned in quite that way.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we just we had great fun with them, and we would. So they were a relief from you know, studying. Mm-hmm. My husband was in the PhD program, and eventually got into the master's program. I had to wait a year to get residency.
Mm.
We couldn't afford non-resident tuition.
Mm-mm.
So it was a relief. It was money stretcher. It was just the fun of, you know, recreation. Mm-hmm. And we had backpacks for our children. Our son was born up there in May of 63. So I'm not sure we had a garden that first summer of 63, but certainly in 64. And so my husband would put him on his backpack and would be hoeing the weeds, and he'd fall asleep as we were hoeing. So it was pretty amazing. Even with all that motion, he could sleep through it.
Mm-hmm. The rocking, maybe.
The rocking.
He went right to sleep.
Back and forth. So it was just really, really great fun. And then in the end, I think they were looking for people to, you know, help manage the garden, so I ended up doing some of that. And our job was mostly to sign people up, and then at the end, when they were going to do the fall plowing, our job was to go through and make sure everything was picked up and out of there, no tools or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people had left stuff behind, so I can remember, especially harvesting carrots, just bags and bags of carrots, which we kept.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody had been told that, you know, this was the last chance, and so we did benefit from some other people who didn't harvest everything, and that was very helpful over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, great recreation, and mm-hmm. I don't remember it especially seeing other people up there. I have no vivid memory of, you know, friends up there that we did have. I know, I think in our doorway we were the only people who were in the garden, but in the building over we had a couple who also gardened. But, you know, with class schedules different and children and so forth, it's, you don't always get up there at the same time.
So, mm-hmm. So you didn't know lots of people around?
I didn't know lots of people. No. Certainly being in the 100s where we were somewhat isolated from the rest of the buildings, we never really met people in the other complexes.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. Did one way that I found your name is that you were involved in advocating for new land for the gardens. Do you remember working on that when they had to move it, I believe, in 1965 or 66?
Yes, I think there was some threat that they were actually going to do away with them altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were going to put in another set of buildings, mm-hmm. of apartments in that area. And I do remember arguing that they were very valuable to the students, both for financial reasons and for the recreation and the, you know, break again from studying. So I don't remember too much about what we actually did about it. That would be, you know, I guess I can say in my life as a whole, I've served on the city council of Tucson and done a variety of neighborhood things. So
yeah.
I suppose that was the beginning of advocating for neighborhoods and for things like gardens and greener approaches to living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Arguing valuable students. Where's my mic? I talked to Robert. How long were you there for?
We were there from, let's see. Girl was born in 63. So we were there from January of 63, 64, 65, I think 67. Mm. 67. Let's see. No, that's not right. I have to look at my resume. That's why I'm not a historian. believe it's on 66. Okay. Yes, I'm wrong. 66.
66. Okay. I think that was the summer. I asked.
It's been in June.
Yeah.
We left in after graduation.
Mm-hmm. So you probably didn't have a garden that.
No, I don't
summer.
Think we had one that
no.
year.
I asked because that would be the first year it was in the new location, and I was wondering if you had felt a difference in the landscape or how the gardens were set up, but you weren't.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
You were just in that one spot. The location where it was in an old apple orchard. And somebody I talked to who was there in 62 or so, said that some plots had problems because of past herbicides being used for the apple orchard. Were those problems still going on when you were gardening?
No, I was not aware of those.
No? Okay. Yeah, it was a fascinating story that they hadn't realized it, but the apple orchard had been used for College of Agriculture students testing herbicides on the apples, and they had stayed in the ground and then killed all the broadleaf plants that came up in that location where the tests had been going on.
I never heard of that.
Huh. So what did you grow? Tomatoes?
We had carrots and tomatoes and green beans. Oh, yes, we probably had Swiss chard.
Mm-hmm. Delicious.
So I don't recall that as vividly. And probably lettuce. I've tried that too. Mm-hmm. And radishes, most likely. Those were big salad people. I don't remember the squash particularly, but I don't know. I really remember the green beans and the tomatoes.
Yeah, those are the... They're coming in like crazy right now, let me tell you. It's fantastic.
Just here in Arizona, it's just so pathetic. I just kind of have given up because it's so hard to... Well, if we grow anything, we have to do it, in the winter time. We have to plant in October and harvest just because everything's too hot. The tomatoes don't even set.
Oh, wow.
And so we had like two ripe tomatoes that started a long time ago.
It's too bad. What was the hardest thing about gardening at Eagle Heights while you were there?
I think it was probably keeping the weeds down. Everything grew so well. And, if you went away for a week or two, I mean, you would ask somebody to water for you, but you could come back and you would just hardly be able to find your plants. They'd just be overwhelmed.
What kinds? What do you remember? What weeds there were then?
Mostly grasses, kinds of things, grassy things that grew tall and fast.
Yeah, right. There's quack grass that just takes over the gardens right now.
Yeah, I'm sure
it's the same thing. How did you find people to water? What sorts of communication were there for connecting gardeners in that way?
We had plots next to us. I mean, we did, there was a defined plot and you were given a plot and so forth. That was one of the organizer's jobs in the beginning of the year.
How were they assigned, or how did people decide where they got a plot, or was it random?
The plot master kind of just handed you a plot. I don't recall there being any difference, because I never knew that, if anybody was fighting over which plot was they wanted or not. Mm-hmm. I think we had a little, either a number or a name was stuck on them with a little, stick or something. Mm-hmm. And they were, I think they had select sticks in the corner or something that laid out the area. Mm-hmm. And there was watering that every so often, and that was one of the things that had to be set up. And then when the fall plowing came, that was one of the things that had to be taken down was the watering system. so that the plow could just come through and do a good job of turning everything over.
Mm-hmm. How many people were you, was it a volunteer position?
Sure.
How many people were involved in the managing of the gardens?
I think there was like one per, hundreds, one for the 100s, 200s, 300s, 400s, 500s, sort of thing. So maybe 5, 6 people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't recall us even having really meetings. I suppose we did, but nothing, sticks in my mind vividly about having a meeting together.
Just became self-running. We knew what you had to do.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of knew. Once you'd been in the garden, I guess, for a year, it was pretty obvious what you needed.
Yep. Were there people besides graduate students who gardened, or was it just Eagle Heights residents and graduate students?
As far as I know, it was just Eagle Heights residents. I don't recall being aware of anyone else.
Now it's expanded, and that's one of the, maybe not issues, but concerns of the college, that it doesn't, that the number of community members and alumni doesn't overtake the number of Eagle Heights residents and students using the garden.
I would have made that argument, that once you're sort of out of Eagle Heights, it seems to me you need to find another UC garden. I mean, I think there's something about, really trying to reserve the graduate student experience for graduate students. I certainly would be one that would be urging them to
Yeah, the tricky part comes in is it's the community members who have become the organizers and organizational memory of the place. Yeah.
That's often what happens when these things, they get longevity.
Exactly.
It's forever. It's wonderful. It's good. The closest to that is being a faculty member.
Yep. Yeah, there are a lot of faculty members who have plots there, too. Were you aware when you were in the hundreds of the university houses, gardens that were nearby?
No.
Okay. They're now part of the Eagle Heights managing system too, and it becomes.
Because I think UCS also, it gives students opportunities to develop leadership skills as well when you give them those responsibilities and learn to work with other people and so forth. I mean, I think just like having a club at the university, I think all those things are opportunities for growth and learning. And so that's why, it's not, I think, fair when you have older people who know how to do it all to keep doing it.
Was the garden a registered student organization? Do you remember?
I think so, but I don't think it was, because there was some issues, like when they were going to move it, and we were trying to organize to remove it, to organize to keep it, it was sort of like, well, who are you and what are you doing, as I recall, we didn't have any standing. And it was almost like the gardens didn't have any standing, like someone had just sort of started them and talked to someone into plowing them. And I think we paid $5 a summer, which went towards the purchase of the irrigation pipes and the water.
Do you know where the water came from?
No.
Must probably.
I would know now, but I didn't have.
See. Do you know who did the plowing or who? The university owned the land, but do you know which department or who was in charge of the land?
That was not mine.
Wasn't part
of it. Somebody
who
had been there longer than I had knew how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the stuff isn't written down.
I know. It really hasn't. It's fascinating how little is known about this place. Did you feel when you were guarded, was it odd to you that the university didn't really care that the gardens were going on when they were going to remove them, or what? Or are there any distinct memories from that time of trying to get them not to remove the gardens?
Well, I mean, it's the story of all community gardens, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Using land that isn't really theirs, and so then when the landlord, whoever it is, decides they want it, they mm-hmm. just kind of say, well, we're going to take it.
Yeah.
And
it's very true.
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing, of course, that the university wouldn't recognize the value of it at the time, you know, that they just kind of ignored it. Well, ignore, maybe it's just tolerated it, rather than, you know, actively helping, at least that's the way it felt.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I guess it was disappointing, but it wasn't shocking, because certainly, subsequent to that, I've seen this happen so many times. it's not surprising, but mm-hmm. you know, it was something valuable, and in some ways, I think it's also a way of testing: is it really valuable?
Mm-hmm.
If people then say yes, we want to keep it, don't
mm-hmm.
take it, you know, or find someplace else for it. If you need to have that particular spot, then we want another spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did talk to someone named Robert House, Bob House, who I believe was the chair of the garden committee.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned that there was a split within the committee, that half of the people wanted to actually protest and have visual signs of protesting the garden's removal, and half of the people on the committee, decided that they didn't want physical protest, but to use communication and internal university workings in order to get the garden a new space. Do you remember where you were on that divide, if you were anywhere on that divide?
Knowing me, I was probably for the physical protest.
I
must say, that would be just a surmise. I don't recall that.
Okay.
I mean, when you tell it to me, it sounds familiar, but I mm-hmm. do not remember where I stood on that.
Mm-hmm.
Except that, in general, I've been protesting out physically most of my life, so
yeah.
I probably have done that too.
It would seem to make sense. He's very circumspect in the way he described it. He said, you know, some people wanted to protest and others wanted to go through the regents, and it was a democratic process, but we ended up going through the regents, and as long as there was progress, people on the other side were perfectly happy. And so I was wondering if
you
had any insights.
Yeah, that sounds fairly fair. I mean,
yeah.
I certainly understand the need to use the, you know, the avenues that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And only protest when you can't get people's attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that would have satisfied me.
Yeah. That is for sure. Well, it's difficult to...
It's a long time ago.
Yeah, it is a long time ago. I've been surprised at how much people do remember the responses I've gotten from people who I've contacted.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Which is nice. It's
well,
very
it's
nice.
Great, as I say, it's part of the lore we tell of our days of graduate school as the garden city for life. So mm-hmm.
The beans growing fast. It's because you're from such a dry place.
And all the tomatoes, my husband likes to remind me, I only told you to buy two, and you bought six. We didn't need six. Two would have been fine.
Summer of tomatoes. Do you remember what other people's plots looked like? Do you remember being interested in what other people, how other people were gardening? Or no?
I mean, you certainly looked at them as you went by, and you noticed whether they were weeded or not, whether people were really tending them or not. I don't remember any really, you know, exotic vegetables, like, you know, the people from India. We had Chinese people that lived sort of downstairs in Proxima. So I don't remember any special thing like that. I seem to remember, you know, everybody had pretty much the same. I remember certainly carrots were very popular.
Still are. The carrots were popular.
Well, they're so easy to grow.
They it's very true.
And they're good. They last over the winter. Unless you were a canner, you know, which, I mean, certainly we have people, farm people, or people with a farm heritage, you know, at in school with us, people in agriculture who had that background. But we also had a lot of people from all over the world that are from very urban areas that weren't used to doing any of that. So then what did you do with all your tomatoes?
You threw them
hot there in the field. Our other funny story, you know, we came from the west. We were not used to field corn, and across the road from us were these great big fields of corn, and we had very, very little money, so that looked like a very tempting thing to do. So one night we just went out and took a couple of ears of corn and brought it back and boiled it. It was inedible, field corn. We didn't know that.
I would have done the same thing until somebody pointed it out. I don't understand why they sweet corn is so much tastier.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's not that you're going hungry, but there certainly is no extra food. I knew the cost of all food down to the penny, and I had my three stores. I went through from one place to another, and I remember my mother coming to visit from California, and I said, I don't know, milk was 25 cents a quart or something, and I asked Mother, well, how much is it in California? She said, I don't know. She said, what? You don't know? 5 cents in this store and 26 cents in that store.
It matters.
It depends on what's important to you.
Where was the field corn? In near Eagle Heights?
Yeah, it was in the big center. The 100s have the road that goes right in front of them. Into the, yeah, the face, the faces, the fronts that faced out. What direction would that be?
South?
I don't know. Away from the lake.
Yeah, probably
the lake was kind of behind us. And towards the university. Anyway, there was a big field out across the road from us, and that's where there was all field corn. I don't know. Let's see, I was there not maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I think it wasn't corn anymore, it was something else. But.
They've made it into a big marsh, I think.
Could be.
Yeah. Did you ever go out to Picnic Point and use the trails around the nature trails?
Yeah, and especially when the lake was frozen, we would walk out on it.
Nice.
For a hike, and of course that was a great adventure to us. We've never been in an area where lakes froze, so that was really cool. And we even took up ice skating and tried to skate on it. We like to remember the time when some poor soul in a university jeep drove across the ice too late into spring, and there he was trying to pull the tow truck was trying to pull the jeep out of the half broken through into the ice.
And oh no!
I've been going and explaining that to your major professor.
What a nightmare!
A nightmare indeed. Yeah, taking a shortcut.
Did you do any ice fishing? It's one of my first memories of Madison, seeing people ice fish in front of
the... We saw them out there, certainly. We tried ice skating on the lake, but we never realized how bumpy it was, because then we realized that if the wind was blowing when the ice was freezing, it got all ripples, but that was new knowledge to us.
Yeah, it's hard to find good smooth ice outside.
So there was over that area, I guess, by the school, and they froze a rink by the school, by the elementary school, and then there was another place I remember, which was an area specifically set aside for that, and they even, you know, scraped it clean and stuff. So you could skate out on there.
Have any more questions for you right now? Is there anything you were thinking I might ask you that I haven't, that you've been thinking about while I've been asking questions?
No, I guess the only thing I could think of, you know, as someone who's done community organizing and that kind of stuff is, you know, how I really didn't have any idea how the garden started, you know, whose idea was it, and how did they organize enough to get permission to get a plot and to get it plowed and so forth. I mean, I felt like I inherited something that was wonderful. That certainly would be a question in my mind, and I don't have the answer to that. It certainly was before me. Do you know what year it actually started with?
I believe it was 59. I'm going to be talking to somebody this Friday named Richard Lawton, who I believe is probably gone, or maybe you overlap, but it sounds as though he was involved in starting it. And so I'm excited to find out how he came up with this idea and how he did work it out, so... I will let you know when I...
Yeah, it's a yucky thing because, I mean, it does take work to do that, and you know, seeing other community gardens trying to get started and keeping them going is also an issue. It always is. People at the end, you know, sort of want things cleaned up, and I guess today we would have a nice compost pile and some places to put, you know, the garden trimmings and try to renew the soil that way, but then we didn't really... They plowed it all under anything that was left hanging around.
So did you use fertilizers or insecticides or herbicides?
Certainly no pesticides. No. I don't recall using any fertilizer.
The big thing
was in the fall with that fall plowing, you had to get everything cleaned off or else it got plowed in.
You don't know who did the plowing?
No, I don't. I really don't remember.
That was a good...
Where they came from.
Good green fertilizer, I guess, if plants are still left to get them plowed back under. And then it was also plowed again in the spring, you said?
Yeah. Plowed again in the spring.
And then the
plants were there. Winter plowing was really to break up the soil and to get the organic material in from the plants. Absorb the water from the winter. Then the spring would be to get it ready for planting. So I think, you know, it was probably just roughly plowed, and then probably, I'm not even using the right word, it was probably disked, you know, just in the fall. And in the spring, it was probably plowed, and then with a fine enough plow. So we did do hoeing. See, that was interesting. I wonder. Well, I guess we took our garden tools with us. We would have to buy tools. Certainly a hoe and a rake, I would think.
Was there a seed fair?
No, I don't remember anything. I think we just bought seeds in the grocery store. There was very little, you know, really exchange of stuff. Even tools and things. I was just thinking, why didn't we have a tool exchange or a tool co-op or something? Because, I mean, when you're really counting every penny, having to go out and buy a hoe and a rake still is an expense.
It is. It is. They,
when people left, you know, there were quote-unquote garage sales. I mean, there were, people did sell their stuff off, furniture and all kinds of things. And probably garden tools got exchanged at that time, too, I would think.
The
people didn't want to move them, and especially people who came from abroad, they certainly couldn't take anything back with them.
No, that would be rather taking a hoe back.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
But I mean, there was certainly, I was just thinking, you know, all people sold all their furniture, and we had a lot of room dividers because the Eagle Heights, I don't know how it is now, it was just one big long room, was the living room, dining room, and with the kitchen at the end. People built all kinds of things to divide the room into, you know, sort of living room area and heating area. And those things were always being sold and traded by people who had really nice stuff and, you know, people who had bricks and boards. Except children knocked those over, so they weren't very good with small children.
Not great. Not really baby safe.
Pretty. Yeah, little kids crawling up on those that don't work very well.
No. And how old were your kids when you were at Eagle Heights?
Well, when we arrived, I think we got in the fall of 63. Our son would have been born in May, June, July, about 3 months old, months old. And then we had a daughter who would have been about 2.5.
Okay. So young kittens. We need to grow a lot of food. How did you feel like you could eat? Did you feel as though it did your produce did last you a long ways into the winter?
Well, the carrots.
The carrots.
My carrots. I think the carrots did, and you know, the lettuce doesn't, and the, you can keep the green beans for a while. But mostly, I remember having, you know, giant bags of carrots that kept us, you know, several months into the winter, certainly. And we didn't have, you know, these were under-the-counter refrigerators, so it's not like you had a big freezer space. We did have a freezer locker because we would buy the meat from the university, from the butchering classes.
Oh, interesting.
Get a quarter of a beef and have a little locker and then a freezer locker, and then you could go get what you needed when you needed it.
The freezer lockers were in the apartment complexes?
No. They were, I don't remember exactly where they were, but they were, you know, in the commercial area. It was a commercial enterprise. And again, I think that's something the students sort of taught each other. You know, you would say, well, where do you buy your meat or something? And I'd say, well, we get it from the university, and you go down there and put your name in, and then they call you when they've got some ready, and then you take it over to this area to freeze. I mean, we really taught each other. And of course, the eggs from the poultry and the ice cream and the cheese. And even there was a product at the time they were trying, which was a kind of concentrated milk that had been sanitized. They discontinued it eventually, but it was not canned, but it was in between pasteurized and canned. That was something that was experimental. It was interesting to use.
And you, how would you use it? Would you use it like milk, or did?
No, you would use it more in cooking. And sauces and things like that, where it was, you know, where you didn't want cream, but you wanted something a little thicker than milk.
Fascinating. And that came from the university as well.
One of the experimental things. I always remember getting the tiny, tiny eggs at the beginning of the laying season. You'd get a lunch bag full of little miniature eggs for, I don't know, 75 cents or 50 cents or something. There'd probably be about 3 dozen, 4 dozen of these. Things are about the size of walnuts.
Oh, wow. You can eat lots of those eggs, I'm sure.
Lots of those.
Would you make lots of omelets?
I don't know. We did a variety of things with them.
Wish that was still. I haven't heard of good ways of buying or accessing the produce from the College of Agriculture now, which is too bad. It would make a lot of sense to use those, to use it. That's nice because it is cheaper.
It was funny, I remember one time we had, the eggs usually had marks on them because, pencil marks, because they would note which hen they came from before they just, and then they would weigh them, I guess, you know, like keep track of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend who came and stayed in our house for some reason, I don't remember why, and she was afraid to use the eggs because there was all this stuff written on them.
Exchange recipes with other gardeners or other residents?
Yes, I would say to some extent. Yeah, we would certainly talk to each other about how you use things where you had excess of them, you know, ideas for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have a newsletter, you know, an Eagle Heights newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And there were good recipes in that. I still have some of the cookie recipes that I use from that.
Mm.
I have wonderful recipes for pumpkin cookies.
Mm. Yum.
And I wrote in it a while. I was a botany major.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote in it things about the wildflowers that were in the woods behind the 100s, between the 100s and the 200 or 300s.
Mm.
And with identification of what the wildflowers were and things like that. So, you know, different people contributed things.
Mm-hmm. Go look for your columns now. I'm reading through those slowly. I haven't been back in a while, but they're missing the first few, the Steenbach College Library archives are missing the first probably set of newsletters. They only start in 61. Just
well,
too bad.
Should but some of my wild articles in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm going to go look. I'll go look.
Yep.
Do you know of anybody else who I could potentially contact to ask questions? Do you know if you have any pictures of your plot, or either you or your husband photographers, or?
Oh, you know, I don't think so. When you're poor, you don't take pictures.
It's
and I don't even did have my husband's movie camera. Well, I'll think about that. If I can come up with something, I'll let you know.
That would be great. I'd love to have a visual idea of what this place looked like.
I think there are some, I can recall some movies of the children in front of the, you know, playing in front of the buildings, but I don't recall anything with the garden.
Yeah. That's okay. If you think about it and you think of something, just let me know. That would be very helpful. Is there anything you'd like to ask me about what the gardens are like now, what I'm doing, what I'm thinking?
Well, I'm interested that you said that they were letting other people in.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
Yep.
I gather then that they're still going and that people are still able to use them.
They are.
Things.
Yep. I'd say the biggest change from what you said is, one, they aren't just graduate students. The other is that they don't do the yearly plowing and disking. So people are able to, so the plots are laid out year-round.
Oh, okay.
And you're able to have your same plot year after year. So it allows people to plant lots of perennials. There are people plant garlic and raspberries and amazing daffodils and lilies and, you know, all these perennial plants.
We did have flowers.
You did have flowers.
I mentioned that. Could maybe think of that. We did have zinnias and things we could then take home with us. But, that's interesting. So raspberries,
Yeah, they spread quickly too, which is surprising. So
then people have to dig them up with a shovel?
In
the spring? Or?
Well, if you get a plot that you have raspberries and you don't want them, but also you do have to dig up the new shoots that are spreading into your beds and things. Definitely. See, I think they spread pretty quickly underground. They're delicious, but also frustrating if they take over your plot.
So then when you leave, you have to will your plants to someone else, or they fight for your plants.
Well, if you leave, then exactly. Whoever is lucky enough to get that plot receives also all of these perennial gifts. It's sort of a surprise as to what may be growing in a new plot that you get.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's cool. There's some upside, you know, if you really have a way you would like to plant or you want all that space, that's a problem, but it's hard to complain with rhubarb and asparagus already growing in a plot.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's probably the biggest difference. That, and it's in a new location, so it looks completely different. But well, thank you very much for talking with me. Huh?
You're most welcome.
I may have more questions and I will contact you.
Okay.
But
sounds
this was good. It was just really helpful.
See what I can remember.
Thank you so much, Margot.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.